It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Sandy Rios with you, and so happy to be coming to you live from National Harbor, Maryland, right on the Chesapeake Bay. Beautiful. It's the Gaylord Hotel, and the reason I'm here is because it is the annual Conservative Political Action Conference. It's sponsored by the American Conservative Union. I've been privileged to be part of this for a long time, every year. In fact, I want to tell you that I am stationed actually just outside the main doors of the conference room. And it's just a great spot. So when people come in and out, I get to see them first. As a matter of fact, Vice President Pence will be speaking tonight. Kellyanne Conway is on this morning. Donald Trump will be on. President Donald Trump will be on tomorrow morning. It's anybody that is anyone in the conservative world comes to CPAC from all over the country. And so it's a great privilege to be here. Well, I have my next guest you've heard with me before, but I'm really looking forward to talking to her because the things, they be a-changing. And the reason why is because I often say, do I not, those of you that listen to me, that I'm not a fan of Senator John McCain. I'm not a fan. I know people say he's a war hero. I know his record. I don't see it that way. He's a survivor. He should be credited with that, but it seems to me that when he started cooperating with the North Vietnamese in the prison, even as difficult as it was, that sort of disqualified him from heroism, from my book. Survival, respect, but now the strange saga of John McCain continues. He was in, I believe, Munich a few days ago, and this is what he had to say about President Trump's immigration orders. Let's listen.
I'm curious of your reaction to a tweet that the president sent Friday night. The fake news media, failing New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, CNN is not my enemy. It is the enemy of the American people. You believe the press is the enemy? You believe any group of Americans are the enemy of another group of Americans?
I was talking about the period, as you know, of the New World Order. A fundamental part of that New World Order was a free press. I hate the press. I hate you especially. But the fact is, we need you. We need a free press. We must have it. It's vital. If you want to preserve, I'm very serious now. If you want to preserve democracy as we know it, you have to have a free and many times adversarial press. And without it, I'm afraid that we would lose so much of our individual liberties over time. That's how dictators get started.
That's how dictators get started, with tweets like that?
They get started by suppressing a free press.
All right, so that's Senator John McCain. Well, you know, just like with most of the things that he said, there's some truth to that, only this truth doesn't apply to this situation with a press that refuses to publish what's true. Well, Dr. Kelly Ward is with me. Kelly is a medical doctor. She is from Arizona, and you remember her name because she challenged John McCain the last time he ran for Senate. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Sandy, thanks for having me. I'm so glad to see you here at CPAC.
You know what? McCain won that race, but you managed to keep him below 50%.
Yes.
In terms of his the voting, and you actually did very well yourself, right?
I did. You know, it was a four-way race. There were two spoilers in the race, as usual. I mean, you saw it with Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. These establishment guys always managed to split the conservative vote, and we as conservatives haven't figured out that we need to coalesce behind the candidate that can win. But I was able to get 40% in that four-way race, and on Election Day,
which is amazing.
Oh, it is. John McCain's never been beaten. I beat him in 5 of 15 counties in Arizona. We only have 15. I beat him in 5. No one's beaten him. ever. And so it's good. And on Election Day, I actually got the majority of the votes on Election Day, just early voting. We have a month of early voting, and he was able to do the same thing that the liberals do during early voting, collect ballots, and convince people who really are not in the know politically that, you know, his name is what's important and we should keep him in Washington. And I think that we've seen since he got back how terrible he just has become, even worse than he was before.
I agree. And Kelly, what people might not know, and I know, after he lost the presidential campaign, he put his war chest behind really bad candidates.
Yes.
One of them was Mark Kirk from Illinois, which is, I was in Chicago at the time. Mark Kirk was a terrible candidate. He's no longer in the Senate. But John McCain wrote a long editorial about he was going to change the party. And he has really, actually, behind the scenes, been very effective at putting bad people in office. And one of them is the gentleman you're about to challenge, and that's Jeff Flake, handpicked by John McCain. He's the other senator from Arizona.
Yes.
So tell us about Senator Jeff Flake.
I'll tell you that Senator Flake and Senator McCain do want to purge the party of conservatives. They both said that people who supported Donald Trump should be kicked out of the Republican Party. That was before he was elected. However, I think they still feel the same way. You know, unfortunately, Jeff Flake, you know, he's been in Washington for about 18 years, which I think is long enough for anybody to be in Washington. He's to the left of John McCain on immigration and border security, if you can believe that. He's been the most openly hostile and antagonistic to candidate Donald Trump and President Donald Trump on our side of the aisle. He wanted Merrick Garland. If it were up to him, he'd be on the Supreme Court today. Voted to fund Planned Parenthood. Voted for the TPP. Votes for bailouts. Wanted to bail out Puerto Rico. The list of atrocities, you know, conservative atrocities that Jeff Flake has committed goes on and on.
He doesn't want to do away with Obamacare.
No. He says we're not going to find the support in the Senate for Obamacare. And behind the scenes, you know, out in front, when he's talking to the real people, if he you know, deems them worthy of speaking to, he says he wants to repeal Obamacare. But he goes behind the scenes to the hospital association and to the hospital CEOs and says, don't worry about your money. We're not going to take those millions of dollars away. And the only way you don't take those millions of dollars away is by not repealing Obamacare. And so that, you know, to me as a physician and to me as a patient, that is one of the most horrible things that somebody in the Senate could say today, especially now that we have the House, the Senate, and the executive branch.
Kelly, I just saw a report on the Phoenix VA. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of weeks ago, how it ranks, I don't know if they sit at the bottom, it's just terrible. Yes. The abuses just continue no matter what has been said and how much money's been poured at the VA. Here, John McCain, supposedly this champion of, you know, veterans' rights in his own state, under his own watch. The Veterans Administration Hospital has been one of the worst in the United States. What do you know about that?
You know, it's ground zero for what's wrong at the VA. Phoenix is ground zero. And it is so unfortunate that John McCain, you know, the most well-known veteran in our country, has done so little to make sure that our veterans get what we promised them. You know, I'm a military wife. My husband and I have been married for 21 years. He's been in the military for 33. And during the time, you know, that we've been together and before, you know, I've learned the importance of keeping promises to our veterans and making sure that we take care of them once their service ends and we are falling down on the job.
Kelly, you and your husband are both the doctors. He's an emergency room doctor.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So what do you think about this whole thing, about this inability now that they have both houses and the presidency, with a president who campaigned on repealing Obamacare? Why? What do you think about their inability now, it seems, to repeal it?
Well, I mean, I think that since 2010, Republicans have run on repealing Obamacare, and they voted again and again and again to repeal it when they knew they had a president in the White House that would veto it, that it would never go through. So they got a lot of political capital. They got a lot of wool to pull over the voters' eyes with Obamacare. And now they need to put, you know, the rubber's hitting the road. They need to vote again and have a president that will sign to repeal Obamacare and get rid of this huge takeover of healthcare liberty and freedom that we've seen in our country over the last 8 years.
Kelly, when is Jeff Flake up now? When is it? You're planning ahead here, right?
At 2018. He's up in 2018.
Coming. And he's one of the Democrats have twice as many, I think, more seats coming up.
Yes.
The Republicans consider most of their seats safe, and I'm guessing that Senator Flake's seat is one they consider safe.
I think that it's considered a Republican seat. I don't think it's in any way, shape, or form safe for Jeff Flake. You know, Newsmax just had a story out yesterday or the day before about our polling showing I'm up 7 on Jeff Flake right now, today. And, you know, we want to keep that seat. Actually, I'd like to see it be a conservative Republican seat. I'd like to see it filled with somebody who believes in small government, low taxes, personal responsibility, and following the Constitution, not someone who's willing to sell out the conservatives in order to be popular in the global tuxedo club.
Kelly, we've talked a great deal before, and we'll talk again about your positions on issues, but one thing that just happened this morning, you know, that the President Donald Trump, his administration rescinded Obama's executive order forcing school districts all over the country to implement bathrooms for transgendered students. Or I guess that's not even the worst. It's constructing bathrooms so that kids can just go wherever they feel like they say they are. So leaving that decision up to children is total chaos. Anyway, he rescinded that order. I just want to know, what do you think about that?
You know, I actually gave a little cheer when I heard it on the news because, you know, just let's be straight. There should never be something called federal bathroom policy. You know, we should be worrying about terrorism, not toilets, and to force our children to be exposed to people of the other sex when they're feeling vulnerable, they're feeling unsure, it's just wrong. I mean, that's a decision that parents and children need to discuss, and, you know, the federal government needs to stay out of our bathrooms.
Kelly, Senator Ted Cruz, excuse me. is sponsoring a bill that would make the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, would classify them as that. Where do you stand on that?
They should be classified as a terrorist organization. They should not be within our government working from within to wreak havoc in our society and in our American culture.
It's going to be a wild ride.
Yes.
Because you know that the, and I'll say infiltration, I mean, you can't say anything else after reading the documents, their own documents, about their plans to destroy us from within. It's hard to miss. And why a lot of Republicans refuse to read the documents, don't want to know, they put their fingers over their ears. It's a serious problem. And they have already made inroads in frightening ways, even in the Republican side of the aisle. So if you win, you're going to have your hands full, Kelly.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, Senator Cruz, Senator Paul, Senator Lee, they need reinforcements. They need conservative reinforcements to help back up these positions that put America first and make America great again. And I look forward to getting to Washington, D.C. and being those reinforcements that they need.
Kelly, this time, you know, you learn stuff when you run a campaign.
Yes.
And, you know, you have nothing to be ashamed of with your last campaign. But what are you doing? What are you doing differently this time?
You know, we did. We had to learn through the school of hard knocks, you know, and I did learn a lot. And John McCain really tried to smash me into the dirt. He would have loved, I'm sure, if I never resurfaced politically again. But the things that he did to me and said about me actually have made me much stronger. They've made me a stronger candidate. They've made me, you know, a stronger person, really. They've reinforced my faith. They've reinforced my relationship with my family and strengthened my profession as well. And so we're building our team early. We're raising money early. We're getting that war chest together so that during early voting, we do not fall down like we did with John McCain, so that we have the resources to go out and get those votes as well. And then we plan fully to win on Election Day in the primary and in the general, no matter who the Democrats decide to put up against us.
Kelly, let's get personal for a second. Michael, of course, as I say, he's in the military. He's an emergency room physician. Be more specific. It's helicopters or something.
He's a flight surgeon. He's a flight surgeon. He was with an F-16 unit when we were in our residency training, and now he's the state air surgeon in Arizona. He's getting ready to retire. He's going to retire in June.
So he'd be free to move to Washington.
That's true.
Kelly, listen, it's always a pleasure. Dr. Kelly Ward is running against Senator Jeff Flake in Arizona, and we'll look forward to more from you, Kelly, as the weeks and months open up.
Thanks, Sandy.
It's not a small thing to put your hat in that ring.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing, and it's a patriotic thing. I think when people run, I have great respect. So God bless and keep you.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. Coming up next, what's happening on college campuses. Gee, we've never talked about that, but we're going to talk about it some more when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139, it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you. From AFR.
We desperately need the light of the gospel to shatter the darkness that is sweeping through our land.
Evangelist Sammy Tippett for Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference.
We're asking Christian leaders to join us in seeking God for a mighty work of His Spirit in this critical hour. I've seen God transform entire nations, places like Romania, where God dispelled the darkness of atheism through the prayers of His people. I want to share with you how God did that and what He can do in our nation. So join me at the Heart Cry for Revival Fusion Conference.
Sponsored in part by American Family Association, the Fusion Conference will be April 23rd through the 27th in the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Michigan State University is banning whiteboards from dorm room doors. And shockingly, it's not because whiteboards are white. That was my first guess, whiteboard privilege. No, apparently the children at MSU have been writing naughty words on other people's whiteboards. The College Fix reports some youngsters even used mean words. Instead of punishing the guilty parties, the university has decided to punish everybody. Not by taking away their erasable ink markers, but by taking away their whiteboards. The NAACP is claiming a great victory for humanity, as if taking away an erasable board is going to stop people from using hurtful language. Anybody ever hear of Twitter? Again, if somebody is writing something racially offensive, then deal with that problem. Take away that guy's whiteboard, not the one writing daily haikus. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Why are you here? You're not here to protect these students from Nazis. No, you're not. This is completely and these students had to teach them on their own. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be standing up to those Nazis.
All right. Well, we could. You've heard me play that before. It's just really, it's terrible, but it's laughable that as a professor, New York University, who was caught in one of the recent demonstrations, screaming and cursing uncontrollably. We have a problem on college campuses. There's just no question about it. Campus Reform is one of the leading organizations tracking all that's going on. Campus Reform is part of Leadership Institute, which is founded by Morton Blackwell, who I've known for many years. Morton has done some great things And campus reform is one of them. And Sterling Beard is with me. Sterling's been with me before. He is, I don't know what your position is, Sterling?
Editor-in-chief.
Okay, that would be nice to know, wouldn't it? Editor-in-chief of Campus Reform. How in the world do you make a decision? What story to cover? There are so many choices now. Seriously.
Well, no, that it does become a problem for us. We have a relatively small staff size. I think we punch well above our weight for how small our staff size is. But, some mornings we have to say, well, we just can't cover this. We don't have enough bandwidth in the office to handle it. But we don't even catch a majority of what goes on America's college campuses. That's how bad it is out
there.
It
is bad. I bet you have students who contact you and report stuff that this went on. Yeah.
All the time. We get multiple tips every single day. Sometimes they send us audio or video recordings of their professor, taking class time to say things like, the election of Donald Trump wasn't, quote, act of terrorism.
Oh, we have that. We have the clip from that. Mm-hmm. That was a teacher in California, right? A lesbian Latino.
Orange Coast College.
Yeah, who said this was, an act of terrorism that Donald Trump. And then he got in trouble for recording her.
Yes, he did. Caleb O'Neill was that student's name, and he actually violated, I believe it was the syllabus and the student code of conduct. There's now a lawsuit pending from him trying to overturn the suspension he received as a result of that video recording. But I imagine he's probably going to make the argument that there's no expectation of privacy in a large lecture course at a public school like Orange Coast College.
And that wasn't like an isolated thing. She said that often, right? She was like railing against the Trump administration often, I think, as I remember reading the story. And he just decided he'd catch her doing it.
Well,
it wasn't like an aside. One day she just got in that mood. She was actually.
It was long and sustained enough that day for him to pull out his phone and start recording.
By the way, I need to say, all that noise you hear, we are coming to you live from National Harbor. This is CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's always fun to be here, honestly. Let me just take a minute to say the American Conservative Union sponsors this. Radio Row is always so beautifully run. I can't tell you what that means to me as a professional. It's just nice. I don't have to worry. I come in and they have everything in place. And it's just a privilege to be part of this. Sterling, this is kind of fun, isn't it? I know you've been to lots of CPACs too, but this year's a little different, isn't it?
Well, you're exactly right. This is I've been to CPAC every year that I've been a part of Campus Reform since early 2014, basically. And I think the mood, I'm very curious to see what the mood's going to be like when I actually get down on the convention floor. Because, while Barack Obama was president, the mood was, let's say, semi-apocalyptic. And so we'll see what happens now and if the mood's maybe a little more optimistic this year.
There are always tons of kids here. Tits. Mm-hmm. I say kids. I don't mean like grade school. I'm talking about college age kids.
Sure.
There are a lot of conservative students. But I don't know what they're. Do you ever wonder, Sterling, what the numbers actually are? The other side is very loud and noisy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to, and they show up in these demonstrations and they burn effigies. But do you have any way of quantifying?
Well, you can find some studies out there that talk about how willing maybe a student would be to participate in, protests or that sort of thing. I don't think that anybody has been able to really attach a number figure. They can just say, maybe 18-25% of students at colleges self-identify as conservatives. But that doesn't mean that everybody else is far left either.
Yeah, most of them just clueless and just there, not knowing.
The loudest ones, perhaps, are far left.
So, Sterling, let's go back to the issue at hand. Tell us what other things are you guys covering? What other incidents around the country?
Sure. Well, it's funny that that professor termed Donald Trump's election an act of terrorism, because all the terror we're seeing right now on college campuses is coming from the left. It's not coming from conservative students. I mean, unless you are of such a mindset that somebody walking around wearing a Make America Great Again hat is tantamount to an assault, which it's not. But you see things like the riot at UC Berkeley a few weeks ago when Milo Yiannopoulos was going to speak there. You see
riot, violence.
An actual honest-to-gosh riot.
They struck him, as I recall. He was struck by objects.
He evacuated, thankfully, before anyone was able to lay hands on him. They had to evacuate him for his own safety. But you saw that Starbucks were getting smashed up. I think a bank was smashed up as well. It was an honest-to-goodness riot. And then you have situations like at Cal State Fullerton where a college Republican ended up trading some words with, I believe it was an associate professor, and the associate professor allegedly socked him in the jaw. And so you see that sort of attitude in the leftist fight club at Central Florida that was training left-wing students to, quote, bash the fash. And that's kind of the attitude right now. It feels very strange to be watching this, but that's where we're at.
You know, one of the most shocking, it's upsetting to me, a few nights ago, University of Chicago students beating an effigy of Donald Trump, and they actually, you know, knocked its head off, and then the body fell. And then some kids were there, little kids, and they were shouting, you know, tear his body apart, tear him from limb. And so the little kids were, you know, tearing the body parts of the effigy of Donald Trump apart while the students were cheering. This is disturbing, Sterling. It's the innocence is lost. You know, it's gone.
Well, I think the problem is that we've kind of hit a point in civil society in the United States where civility and politeness are just not expected anymore. So you end up with situations where, you know, where you can have a Milo Yiannopoulos rise up on the right, who can, you know, say, you know, kind of be a bit of a bomb thrower, but the reaction to him is even more uncivil. And so that's kind of where we are. I mean, we're not back to, you know, the days of senators beating each other nearly to death on the floor of the Senate with canes, thankfully. But you look at college campuses, and sometimes I worry that we're not too far off from it.
You know what, Sterling, I make a distinction between a good old fight over ideas, where, you know, that's what you're describing, the Senate, and now in Korea. I think it's Korea where they get in fights on the floor of their parliament. You know, that's a little different than violence just for violence sake, just tearing down and burning, and that's a different thing. Getting angry and fighting with people is distinct from just destruction and violence, and I think it's important to make that distinction. I've often said, sometimes I think it would be a good thing if the gentleman in the Senate might throw a few punches, because, you know, that would be more honest than the way they operate sometimes. So, Sterling, there are moves. In fact, there's a, I'm not sure the exact name, but the higher education bill, something like that, coming up for authorization. Mm-hmm. And there are some moves underway to try to restructure and undermine and defund some of the left who have such a hold on colleges and universities right now. Have you guys talked about any of that, some kind of a fix for all of this?
Well, we haven't been tracking that specific bill federally, if I think I know what you're talking about. But you do see stuff like there's a recent bill on, I believe, Iowa, which actually would require universities to try to, you know, balance out their faculty politically by, you know, saying, you know, you can't hire in a department if that hiring would tip the scales, you know, more than 10% you know, ideologically either way. So it's kind of a weird situation. I, you know, small government conservative, you don't necessarily like the idea of the government trying to mandate ideological diversity. But at the same time, it seems to me the only way you're going to get colleges and universities to, you know, make a change, to sort of, you know, pull out of this, you know, left-wing dive that they're in, is greater oversight and accountability. In public, that means legislators taking an active interest in what's being taught, saying, hey, is this what we really want our tax dollars going to? And in the private realm, alumni and members of boards of trustees saying, hold on, we shouldn't be spending money on this. But it's going to have to come from outside, not inside the not inside academia.
Sterling, when you were in college, what was your most left-leaning professor? And do you remember any incident when you were in school where you knew, I don't know if you were conservative when you were in school, so that you understood? Did you?
Well, I've always self-identified as a conservative. Now, keep in mind, my freshman fall was the fall of 2008, and it was not a cool time to be a conservative on a college campus. But, you know, I was very fortunate. I made sure to try to pick professors who had a good reputation. I was very fortunate that I avoided, you know, any real attempts at indoctrination by my professors. I had a lot of really good professors who I adore, you know, some of whom I still keep in touch with occasionally. They were very good. But that's the kind of thing you have to do now, is you have to be careful and make sure that you're not wasting your parents' tuition money on, you know, just political drivel.
You know, when I went to school, it was a long time ago when I was in college, and I took a summer class at a secular university. I think it was a sociology class, and I worked really hard and, of course, participated in the discussions, because you can imagine I would participate in the discussions. I had very strong feelings about things, and the professor was not down. I mean, he was really on the left. And I remember working really hard, and he gave me a C in the class. That was the first time I ever ran up against, that wasn't the pattern, you know, but that was my first experience with he does not like my opinion, so now I get a C. And that was the reason for that. But it's much worse now. Much, much worse for kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, universities have... Yeah, there was a study fairly recently. I can't remember who it was by off the top of my head. But if I recall correctly, it showed that, you know, faculty back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, what have you, were a little more ideologically balanced. But the left-wing tilt has only kind of accelerated since about the 1980s. And, you know, you could say, well, that's because, oh, smart liberals want to go into academia and smart conservatives want to start businesses or what have you. But it is a problem because when you get the left, when you get one side of the ideological divide completely running an institution, that leads to, well, let's say abnormal or less than optimal behavior. And that's what we have now with American universities.
Well, and you know as well as I do that there are a lot of conservative thinkers. Look, our founding fathers were conservative thinkers, for heaven's sake, and they couldn't get positions in colleges and universities today because of their positions on the issues. You know, there is a litmus test, and, you know, the left really does control who gets hired. And those that do get hired that happen to be conservative get singled out. They don't get tenure. I mean, it's a serious problem.
Well, if they ever let it be known that they're conservative in the first place, I mean, if you're going for tenure, you can't afford to rock the boat. If you rock the boat, there's a very good chance that maybe you never make tenure, and then you have to keep jumping from job to job, you know, outside of tenure track, and you never get paid a good salary compared to your tenured counterparts. So if you're going to be a conservative professor, you kind of have to hold down and wait a few years until you get tenure, and then you can hoist the Jolly Roger.
Sterling, if you had kids college age, and I know you don't yet, you did, are there schools out there that you think have a good handle on this and are giving a balanced education?
One college that immediately comes to mind, I've known a couple of people who went there and they seem to have come out pretty independent thinkers, as Hillsdale College. Actually, I've heard very good things about Hillsdale. And you can get a good education a lot of different places, but you have to be careful picking your college, picking your courses, picking your major, picking the professors who you take those classes from, because there are so many different ways that you could end up wasting your time getting fed, sort of progressive dribble, this social justice narrative nonsense. So you have to be very active. You can't be lazy about it, because otherwise you will get that.
A lot of parents now are actually having conversations like, why would we send our kids to an Ivy League school, spending, you know, lots of money, taking out loans, doing whatever we have to do to have our children then absorb information that turns them against our entire worldview, our family, our way of life, and really sets them on a course. I don't think there are a lot of parents with the kind of courage it takes to say, you know, like your kid gets an says, you got into Harvard, and then you go, no, you're not going to Harvard, because I don't think there are a lot of parents that would do that, but maybe they should.
Well, the key there is to make sure that if you're questioning whether or not your child is going to go off and turn against you after 6 months away, you need to have done some work in the previous 18 years, is the position that I would take. Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, things happen, but ideally, if you give your child a solid enough grounding, a solid enough base, if you're at home at the dinner table, if you're having family meals, if you're talking about the issues of the world and exploring things and talking to them about how things work, the way things work, your children are going to come in, are going to come back more or less similar, better educated, but more or less similar to the way they left, I'd say.
Well, it's certainly true that when you are in a situation like that and you have your ideas challenged, that certainly happened to me in college. I did come out with a better understanding of why I believed what I believed after going through some, like, really questioning some of the deepest things that I thought. I came out much better rooted, and I think that that's really what our goal is for them. If they go in and all they hear is your point of view, you don't want that either.
Sure, sure. You know? Well, because the family dinner table is wonderful. College is good, but neither one's really the real world, because you're not getting exposure to all the different people that you would in day-to-day life, or that you would experience in a business setting or what have you. So you do need a little bit of balance with your viewpoints, just in the kind of exposure you get. But you can't have one side or the other totally. You're absolutely right.
All right, Sterling Beard, Campus Reform. It's campusreform.org. And they have great videos. They go out on the street, go to college campuses. It's a great source for what's going on college campuses. Sterling, thank you for joining me.
My absolute pleasure.
We'll see
you
again soon. All right, Sandy Rios. Coming up next, the chairman of the American Conservative Union, Matt Schlapp, the guy running this whole thing, will join us. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
God has uniquely gifted you for His purposes. You are wired for good works. Volunteering with Operation Christmas Child directly connects you with God's global purposes. By serving year-round, you further the proclamation of the gospel in more than 150 countries through a simple gift-filled shoebox. To learn more about local, year-round opportunities to make disciples, or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800 Families Extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Among the most important planks of Donald Trump's winning platform last year was his commitment to replace the Obama strategy of embracing and empowering Sharia supremacists with one aimed at defeating them. The outlines of the Trump approach were laid out in a major address the Republican nominee delivered on August 15th. Mr. Trump explicitly called for countering Sharia, the totalitarian and anti-constitutional ideology that animates the enemies he described as radical Islamic terrorists. He promised to stop admitting such foes into our country, a step being reaffirmed with a revised executive order on immigration and refugees. He also vowed to end the willful blindness that has enabled networks in our society that support radicalization. The Muslim Brotherhood is the prime mover behind those networks. The prompt implementation of these commitments must be a top priority for the president's new national security advisor. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We are at CPAC. It's the 44th annual, and there's a banner above the stage behind me. Their theme, Reclaiming America's Promise. This is by far the largest gathering of conservatives anywhere in the country. It's their Super Bowl, and this year is very significant. Consider this. Last year, candidate Donald Trump skipped this conference because he was worried that the folks here felt he wasn't conservative enough, that he wasn't one of them. Fast forward 1 year, President Donald Trump will be the first president since Ronald Reagan in 1981 to address this crowd in their first year as president. On top of that, he nominated Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, the conservatives' favorite, to fill that swing position. And his vice president, Mike Pence, is a huge star for many years here. In fact, the American Conservative Union, who puts on this CPAC, rates every president's cabinet, Republican president's cabinet, and they said this one is by far the most conservative they've ever seen in history. We spoke to ACU's chairman, Matt Schlapp, to learn a little more about the significance of this year and what we can see coming for the next few days.
All right, I'm going to interrupt that report because why would we listen to Matt Schlapp on tape when Matt Schlapp is right here with me?
How are you, Sandy? I think I'm too many places, clearly.
Look at you. You are here and you are there. That's amazing. Matt is, of course, the chairman of the American Conservative Union, and they run this fabulous conference, which has really only gotten better through the years, Matt. CPAC, we're at National Harbor, Maryland. But honestly, when Griff was reporting that, doesn't that take you back to last year?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about what has changed.
What a difference a year makes. And I was wondering who that was. I knew that voice. It was Griff Jenkins.
Griff exactly Jenkins on Fox.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, how could we keep up with all the news? So we're remembering that Donald Trump did back out last year.
He did.
Because Cruz was kind of the favorite, he felt, and he was.
Yes, he was. He won the straw poll that year.
Yes, he did. And but all the candidates came. And so now look what's happened. It's just amazing. And Matt, let me just say also, I met Matt when he was first working with George W. Bush.
That's right.
Who was chief of policy.
No, I wish that would have been really, really powerful. I was the head of the political office.
Oh, okay. All right. Political office. Nevertheless, Matt, did you ever dream that a President Donald Trump would actually implement policies and embrace policies that were more conservative than George W. Bush?
Yeah, no, it really is interesting, isn't it?
Isn't it? I wouldn't, yeah.
I love George W. Bush, and I think George W. Bush was a great president. We didn't get a lot of things right as well. I mean, presidents look back on their time in office, and I think, you know, they have regrets, whether they admit it publicly or not, and they know things they did well and things they didn't. I will tell you about Donald Trump. I've gotten to know him before he even thought about announcing for president this most recent time. And I was always impressed. I've always thought that he had conservative instincts. He's witty. He has an interesting take on things. He's always kind of very, puts it on the table and tells you what he's thinking. And he's a great listener. That's the one thing I always took away from meetings with him is he would ask me a lot of questions. Now, maybe because he thought that I was giving him just ridiculous answers and he just wanted to keep going. Or maybe he is someone who really does listen to people who have a different, who've walked a different life. And he wants to know what their perspective is. And I think he's been doing that for a lot of years. And I think he has good instincts, and he's combined it with an ear to knowing the pain people were in after 8 years of Obama. And let's face it, it was worse than the 8 years of Obama in terms of economic stagnation and the concern about what's happening with this radical Islamic threat. And the fact that we don't even recognize our country, we don't even know what bathroom to go to, Sandy. I mean, it's insanity.
This morning we know a little better which bathroom to go to. You know,
I haven't even looked around here. I mean, I'm scared. I'm scared to know.
Well, you know, this morning Donald Trump's administration rescinded order from the Obama administration about the schools, public
schools. Can you imagine that it's controversial that it shouldn't be one of the top priorities of the Attorney General to police bathroom policy around the country? I mean, think about federal power just where it does not need to be.
No, I know. And Matt, you know, because you come from the political world, and again, you know, I am a great fan of George W. Bush,
too.
And
me too.
I'm so grateful for what he did and for just who he was.
And a good, decent man.
Exactly. Okay, not speaking of him, but just that world in general, there isn't a lot of courage in that world. And courage to win, courage to okay, I'm going to be a little brutal on you here, but not you, but courage to come out victorious no matter what it takes, but not necessarily speak out, step out. None of them want to do that. So Donald Trump is just so different.
He is so different.
Can
I tell you something, Sandy? Yeah. People wouldn't think this. So, as you said, I worked for President George W. Bush. My wife, Mercedes, and I met each other in Richard Nixon's former office in the OEOB. So, you know, we've worked for the party, the Republican Party. I worked for a member of Congress. So a lot of people would say, oh, you're establishment. But I have to tell you, sometimes when you're a conservative inside this bubble in Washington, D.C., and you work in Republican politics, we feel as lonely as the people do out in the country, because in the end, you know, that we're not really what that world is. And I have to say, over the years, I felt more and more like they didn't really respect or care about my point of view. So I just love the fact that Donald Trump took a 2x4 and just broke it all up. It doesn't mean that those people don't play a role going forward. They play an important role. But he's in charge, and he gets to make these choices. And I just love that part. The disruption, I know it's chaotic and it scares people, but we needed it.
Absolutely. You know what? Courage breeds courage. And so he's stepping out on issues that some of them, I think at the Senate now when I say this, would not dare step out on. And I think there is already a little bit more boldness, and I think there would be more if he is not destroyed by the press, if something untoward that we don't know about happens to take him down or to hurt him or injure him so he has no voice. I think he can bring this reluctant group of politicians around.
I agree with you. There's nothing that a politician respects more than popular support amongst the people. People keep saying, well, he's not a conservative, he's a populist. You know, these are terms that we all learned in school, but, you know, what that really means is that he cares about what people think. And I have to look at that and
shocking.
I say, I'm having trouble seeing why that's a problem if that's married with these instincts to do the conservative thing. I like that marriage. That could be a good thing.
You know, Matt, I remember when you took over CPAC. It was controversial time.
I can't seem to get away from controversy, Sandy. What's wrong with me?
Well, because God places some of us in those positions for a reason. And so you were placed in that position, and it was the whole issue of whether a homosexual log cabin Republican should be part of CPAC, and you made a pretty firm decision and drew a pretty firm line, because there'd been some gay marriage was not implemented, and we were still trying to we realized, I think, that a lot of the gay Republican groups were at their heart, some of them, wanting to advocate for something that party didn't stand for, which was gay marriage. So
that's
it was a little more clear. Now you inherited something, or you inherited a time. You're in this post during a time when another issue happened, and that was Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, for those that say the outside chance that people don't know, Milo was a Breitbart editor, very gay, very outspoken, but also very controversial.
Yes.
He's the one that a riot happened in Berkeley over not allowing him to speak. He says really good things.
He does.
And you had invited him to speak.
Yes.
And then a tape appeared where he appeared to be, I think undoubtedly was, whatever his motive, whatever the moment meant, embracing pedophilia and priest-boy sexual relations, it was very offensive.
Which are crimes.
And you made a hard decision, Matt.
Yeah.
Just tell us what you think about. So
let me take you through these a little bit at a time. So I'm a practicing Catholic. I have strong views on all these topics, including cultural issues. I have conservative views on these issues. What I tried to do as I became the chairman of the ACU is to make sure everybody knew what our positions were on those issues. I think what happened with CPAC is that it's broader for like libertarians and conservatives. So you go on, you present topics in a way where there's more diversity of opinion from the conservative.
You're trying to unify.
That's right. So, but ACU is not that. ACU is it has Reagan positions on all these issues. So at CPAC, I do try to be more inclusive. So the thinking was on Milo, which is after Berkeley happened. Even my mom called me, who taught me everything I know and is my hero and has the same views on all these issues. She said, you know, I don't think this young man should be shut down. I think he should be allowed to speak. Lord knows there's enough liberal professors who are like literally filling our kids with rot. And if we have some voices from the right, she probably wouldn't agree with Milo on 50% of his policy positions, but she thought that my wife told me the same thing, and my daughter told me the same thing. So I just think we're inheriting a culture that is not the culture that we want. It's broken. And we're trying to reach out to this new generation and to young people. We have to be open to what they're listening to. And I think my job as the chair of this organization is to also help those voices. You know, Milo came to me very respectfully in a suit and tie and said, here's what I think the issue is on campus and I would like to address it. You know, I'm kind of a sucker for someone being respectful that way. And
it's a huge issue. And we saw all publicly how he was treated. So
that's right.
You were trying to respond to that.
The other thing is, Sandy, is I wouldn't want to bamboozle you and I don't want to bamboozle the people that fill that arena. I want them to hear and see what's going on in their culture. I want to do it in a constructive manner. But I trust them to make the right judgments. The problem with the way the left handles our institutions and the media and everything else, they shut us down. They call you a hater. They call me a hater. They try to quell us. They want us to be quiet. And they don't want us to share our perspective because they know if we get to share our perspective, guess what? The American people are good. Ronald Reagan taught us that. And that we will convince them. They will join our cause. And I want more people to listen to these voices. Now, I made a mistake with that invitation, and we pulled it back. And I've taken my lumps for it. But I think it was the right intention, even though it was clearly the wrong thing to do.
I do understand that completely. And Matt, you know, I told you privately, I really appreciate and respect your decision. And I thought you handled it beautifully. And I would have said this too, something similar.
You would have been more eloquent.
No, I don't know about that. But we want only the best for him. The story he told, however humorously and offensive he told it, is a sad story.
He was abused as a young child.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think by more than one person. Yeah. And, you know, there's always going to be a brokenness to somebody who has to go through that horrible thing.
Right. So respectfully, you disinvited him. And I was very grateful for that. It's not like we think, you know, we all have our stuff. And I'm grateful that you did that.
Thank
that was
you,
a
Sandy.
Tough decision.
Yeah. I tell you, I had to do Morning Joe the next morning, and I like Joe, and they have me on a fair bit, but that's a tough show to sometimes, you know, speak up.
What did they say? What position did they take?
I don't know, you talked about God putting you in a place. It's like, I find that one thing CPAC does is it really helps my prayer life, because I find myself, my wife and I just saying, Lord, we are confused. What is it? What is you want us to do?
Matt,
and, you know, I just can't tell you.
Yeah, I'd have a few stories about that myself.
I bet you
on
do.
My knees,
I can
Lord.
Think about it, yeah.
Lord, don't make me do that or say that or help me. You know,
Or I never thought I'd be having to talk about this topic.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Come on, pedophilia. I mean, we don't want to talk about these things, but you know, Sandy, this is our culture.
Yes, it is.
It is what it is, and I also get a little discouraged with conservatives who almost want to ignore it. These things are happening.
These people are going
through this, and we've got to find a way to embrace them, heal them, bring them along.
You know, I actually think we need to develop what we've done with crisis pregnancy, where we've muted that whole argument over abortion by providing, showing the love of Christ, you know, through this other.
Right.
This is what we need to do on this issue, because there are so many broken people out there like Milo's story and others. And so rather than
being... And it's like abortion, think about it.
Yeah, it is.
It relates to abortion. It really does, because sexual crimes result in unplanned pregnancies. And it's also such a shameful thing that people don't want to talk about it.
Right.
They just, who would want to bring this up? Well, we all know that you got to share with somebody, you know, in order to get better. And look, there are no more serious issues than questions of life and the mistreatment of people sexually. But there are all kinds of other issues that the culture and our society in America is dealing with. And I think the conservative movement can lead the way on healing the country. I know you believe that. Mm-hmm. I know the people here believe that. I know people who aren't conservatives would think that's an audacious and thing to say. But I think it's true. I think the people who love their country and have conservative values will save this country.
And Matt, I just appreciate that your goal is to cover the whole spectrum. Because I always challenge my friends who don't agree on the moral issues that we can't say that we want a border on the South and that we want to enforce our immigration laws, and yet on sexuality we want to throw out all borders and all rules.
Sandy, I always say to those folks that say, well, can these Christians just stop with like all their Christian views and politics? And I always say, but be honest with me, if you have a flat tire tonight and you need help, don't you want one of those little Christian voters to come driving by? And they almost always say, yeah, that's true.
Hedges, good hedges and good boundaries are good.
They
create some really fine people, which reminds me of other things I can't say to you. But Matt, it's great. Thanks for making time this morning. Matt Schlapp, again, chairman of the American Conservative Union, which is the parent organization of this event, CPAC. They do great work, too. We didn't get to that point.
We're doing good things, Sandy.
Yeah, you're doing good things. They rate candidates. They get this great rating system
right.
for candidates, which is very trustworthy.
We now do every state legislature. We're helping the families. We're doing so many good things.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.